Welcome to Crane Radio. Celebrate a life well lived.
Welcome to this first season of The Modern Crone, the 21st Century Shaman. I have invited the most powerful, eclectic and woke shamanic folk I know to talk with me about their take on shamanism and tap you straight into the minds and hearts of those who are the real deal 21st century shamans. Real people, real stories and a whole lot of mind-blowing, spirit-stirring juju. It is my absolute pleasure to welcome Zenta Zebergs to The Modern Crone, Season 1, The 21st Century Shaman. Grounded in her personal journey and respect for global, indigenous and shamanic cultures and traditions, with a background in counselling, women's creative spirit facilitation and private practice as an oncology massage therapist, Zenta has over 20 years' experience in the mind-body-spirit wellness field. Born in 1966 in Australia to artist parents, Zenta's life has been imbued with the presence of creativity as a natural expression of life. Inspired by ancient and indigenous cultures across the world, the traditions of rock art in particular never cease to inspire and uplift her spirit, carrying original awareness and respect for our oneness with nature and the celestial universe from which we are born. Through what Zenta terms, entering the realms of the poetic, we can each experience ourselves as a channel for divine source as we embody the livingness of consciousness, seeking to know itself within the dance of creation. Through her art and an incredible experience of unexpectedly channeling of godheads of ancient Egypt, Zenta has created over 17 paintings over the last 6 years, which have combined with her writing and culminated in the Lioness Light Oracle Deck. Zenta Zebergs, welcome to the first season of The Modern Crone, The 21st Century Shaman. How are you today?
Thank you so much, Danny. I am well, and it's a joy to speak with you today.
Fantastic. Thank you. So I reckon we just jump straight into the topic for this season, which is modern day shamanism. So for you, what is modern shamanism?
Yeah, well, beautiful question. And it's, for me, shamanism is a word that incorporates, it's the closest thing perhaps that we can come to have a shared understanding of the ancient, indigenous, global roots of the human journey and our relationship with nature, with the universe, with charting, the landscape of that which we arise from. And we all share this, every human being on the planet, we are celestial, and yet through being spirit embodied in matter, we are rooted in the embodied livingness of this planet and everything that has been before. And when you, for me, traveling back through time and therefore through ourselves, it's in our DNA, it's the relationship to nature, the language of nature, and the human response and listening and developing a sense of communication with the natural world. And each culture on all the different continents that have been shaped very much by their environment, by the climate, that has in part shaped the language of, you might say, the shamanic language, of that region, of that culture. So even in that, you realize that, shamanism is about our language, our communication, our relationship with nature. and the voice of nature as it comes to us. And what an incredible grounding, refuge, strengthening of our being present, you know, to the livingness of life, to the visceral experience, and to everything that we share our life with, you know, the birds, the trees, the grasses, the voice of the ocean, the language of the sea creatures, the experience of the wind. You know, this is what we are made of.
So beautiful.
So that's, yeah, the kind of sense for me, the shamanic, you know, what that is now is in some sense the same as it's ever been. But I suppose because for the greater part, particularly in the Western world, and even you might say globally now, due to the changes, you know, particularly over the last couple of thousand years, we have as a species, you might say, overall become very disconnected from nature, disconnected from that sense of relationship and belonging that was held by our ancestors, you know, whether Celtic or North American or African or Aboriginal Australia or Siberian, you know, it's so how we now, it's not so much a reinvention, is it, of shamanism, but it's a reconnection to perhaps the basic principles.
Yeah, I agree.
And how we then engage with that now that has relevance in this, at this time. And I'm sure, you know, it's like that. So there's these certain streams that remain there because they're in a way impersonal and they're not specific to the particular landscape. They're like archetypal principles, and yet within that then we here now, as there would have been over the eons of our presence on this planet, a way of making it relevant and shared so that everybody can share in this language of belonging and also understanding. How do we navigate? How do we live?
Beautifully expressed. So, I mean, we do see it, don't we? We're seeing now like this sort of resurgence, if you like, within, you know, the spiritual commentary, spiritual offerings. And I really see that as well as a return because of this disconnect with nature. But also, secondly, there seems to me to be a growing understanding that we're not separate from nature. It brings us to bear. We are nature. And secondly, this sort of imperialistic view that's possibly held around nature, that it's not sentient, not intelligent, that it's a commodity or a resource, this seems to be changing. And this is an aspect within all shamanic cultures, is that the wild is a living field of energy, intelligence and information, you know, and which leads us to my next question that I want to ask you. So, you know, in shamanic practice like ritual or healing or journeying or any of those beautiful practices that we now have access to, which is one of the privileges of living in this age as well, it requires an expanded perception to slip sort of beyond the critical mind and access directly that information and that guidance that we're talking about, which very often emerges through symbols and synchronicities and sensations. That's how I teach it in my courses. You describe this connection with spirit as, which I love, as entering the realms of the poetic. Could you tell us a little bit about what that feels like for you?
Yes, thank you. And it is, and as you said, there are so many tools and ways that we can enter, you know, and become part of that stream of consciousness that is offered to us in a reciprocal manner through nature, through the presence and the livingness of trees, of rocks, of mountains, of the water, of the nature of animals, and even the ether, you know, that which resides in the consciousness of the air, of this, you know, this one continuum that we are part of. So yes, for me, entering the realms of the poetic. Now, in, you might say, a more anthropological perspective, it's about firstly entering that light trance state. So that is not as technical as it sounds. You know, we can enter into that facilitated through rhythm. That's why rhythm and drumming or rattling are one of the kind of shamanic principles, you might say, like the tools that begin to open and allow that loosening of the critical mind, the linear mind, so that that spaciousness within can begin to open, and therefore the senses within that spaciousness within can become like an antenna to receive the, I like to call it like the gossamer weave, the gossamer whispers, the gossamer threads of information, of reciprocal consciousness. So, and we cannot be, again, with our linear mind in control of what we receive or how we each navigate that. I love to remind people that we are each a divine channel, and the realms of the poetic are available to all of us, and we are each an instrument. You know, so we are that instrument, and we are unique unto ourselves. So whilst there are beautiful and very helpful guidelines that, yes, grounded shamanic practitioners and those who, you know, have really practice deeply and deepen their understanding of the pathways, you might say, to opening into those realms in a grounded manner, because it's as they say, you know, you need a kind of a bit of a map. You know, it's like you're entering into uncharted territory, so it's good to have some sense of access points and of how we state to some sense of a path so that we can find our way back. But it is entering the realms of the poetic, allowing the unexpected, the nuances, and that we don't need to understand everything with our rational mind immediately in our experience.
This is really something that's come up in all of these interviews for the 21st Century Shaman that I'm doing, is that when we experience strong dreaming, when we experience, you know, visioning or energetic shifts when we're in that light trance state or in ritual, or for you, which we're going to get into in a sec, which I can't wait to talk about, is your beautiful creative expression. It's active and it's happening then and there. So it's not really about dipping into the gossamer weave and extracting information which you then analyse, because the action's actually happening in the experience. Is that how you would describe it for you?
Yes, absolutely. And it's, you know, drinking at the well. It's another form. You are drinking. You are imbibing and receiving unto yourself. And then in some sense, it does the work.
Yeah.
The later unfoldment or even the instantaneous clarities that you may receive or connect to, they are in a way an unbidden natural process. So we don't have to force it. And so that's why I also use that word, entering the realms of the poetic, because it allows or reminds us that there isn't a formula. It's even, yes, often we recognize and, you know, we have come to have that sense, oh, yes, the number 8 tends to carry a vibrational imprint of this connected with that, or to see a bird in flight has a certain kind of imprint and offering, but the particularities of that bird at that moment in its flight, or the way that number 8 comes into your life at that time or is invoked through your body, it's, you have to allow for the poetic and for your own personal intuitive reciprocal relationship with that, that we don't need to get too quick into looking up as if in a dictionary, you know, the meaning of everything and then, you know, making it fit into a box. And then, because that also in a way cuts off any further livingness.
Yeah,
because
I agree.
Things change, they shapeshift, they further reveal. And then all of a sudden, if you kind of can hold space for something, you then have a discovery of a greater whole that you weren't even aware of at the time.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the way that I explain it with my students is that there's a difference between mainlining it and remaining one with it as it unfolds, or conceptualizing it and abstracting our awareness from it, which is what we tend to do when we try and catch it and interpret it, possibly before the full fruit of it has ripened, you know.
Yes, yeah. That's a lovely way to put it. Yes, that's right.
So, Zenta, in our previous conversations, you've described to me an incredible and quite spontaneous experience that you've had where in a session with a shamanic practitioner, so a personal session of yours, you experienced an influx or a rising of spirit, but with a particular signature of Egyptian knowledge. And that then consequently opened up a channel to you which largely informed your last large body of work. And would you be happy to share with us what that experience was like for you? And please.
I'd love to. It was very unexpected, very unbidden, and I had gone to see a beautiful lady, Valerie Barrow, actually to just simply rest in some peace and a healing space with her. I was going through, you know, a challenging time, and I didn't realize she was also a soul regressionist and a channeler herself, in fact, a galactic channeler. However, I reached out to her and very intuitively and arrived and just said, oh, I really need to lay down. Is that okay? Can I rest? And she said, of course, darling. And so she guided me gently into a place of peace and then asked the question, would I like to connect with my overriding soul, our family? And I said, oh, yes, that sounded lovely. And then I'm very unexpectedly and instantaneously experienced something within my body that was quite shocking. My whole body was as if taken up by an energy, and it reconfigured my physical body, my posture, my jaw spontaneously opened wider than I could have imagined possible. And instantly, I found myself deep beneath the earth. I knew I was in Egypt and I was a mummy. I was both within and without. I was male, and the, you know, mummification wrappings were so old as if to be almost a bluish grey dust. I was completely wrapped except my hands and my head were free in a huge sort of quartz chamber, and above, I knew above there was possibly a pyramid. And Valerie just asked the question, what is your name? It was not anything that either of us were expecting to occur. And through my body, a voice came out very strong, and he announced, I am Breath of Ptah. I am arising and awakening once more. And I had not consciously heard of Ptah. I didn't have an active relationship with the ancient Egyptian mysteries. And in the instant that this all occurred, which, as I said, was actually quite frightening, it was a shock because I had no preparation for it and it was so physical, but immediately, in a way, in grace, because of my, you know, years of experience in other, you know, journeying other states, I knew to listen with my senses for the energy. And I recognized that this was not malevolent. There was nothing, you know, that was threatening to me, that this energy was pure love. And it was a very important moment of using all my resources and my senses to have full clarity, to really trust and be present. And once I recognized that consciously, I then basically became willing. I opened myself to the further experience instead of shutting down or contracting in fear. So, yeah.
It's just incredible to experience that. No, and I can imagine there'd be a lot of people listening to this going, whoa, you know, that possibly could sound like, you know, what some people might define as a possession.
Yes.
That some people. Yes. So yet in shamanism, this mechanism, if you like, I can't think of a better word, where greater fields of intelligence and deeper grids of knowledge, even very ancient, are moved through our individuated field, our individuated consciousness, and sometimes that's called for, and sometimes in your case that can happen spontaneously as well. So what played out after that?
So he, in fact, just prior to that, to the physical announcement and Valerie asking the question, what is your name, I actually began to spontaneously sound. So I was sounding vowels, and in my consciousness in that moment, I thought, oh, this is perhaps I'm clearing. I had no idea what was coming next, that perhaps I was clearing for something more. I thought on a personal level, this sounding, these incredibly long vowel sounds being sounded through me spontaneously were a clearing of my own energy field, but literally again from the body, through the body. And this is the groundedness of the shamanic reality to your body. You know, we're not separate. It's all one. There's this, you know, synergy, spirit embodied in matter. So after Pitar announced his name, he then began to speak. And through that which he spoke was also confirmation of the purity of the light and the place that this one was speaking from and what was being offered. Because I have now been making myself available to the channeling since 2018. It was March, I think, 2018 that this first event occurred. And each time my body is still involved, but not to the same degree. It was though that first experience almost had to kind of really, I don't know, go right in there, literally to the bones. And everything that has been spoken, he now, it's what you might call holds space for what they have said are the spectrum of light voices, each of which absolutely speak of the re-arising of the ancient divine feminine. And they have transmitted so much information, and I also are gifted as a physical instrument to experience things that have absolutely shaped and reshaped my understanding and my awe of, you know, our presence as a field of consciousness and the continuum that we are part of. And it was an incredible confirmation as then I later looked up, well, who is Pitar? What is that? Who is he? To find over the, you know, months and a couple of years that have unfolded since, Pitar, as I discovered, is considered the governor of the age of Aquarius. Wow. So no wonder his first words were, I am arising and awakening once more. He is also the consort of Sekhmet, the lioness-headed goddess, with whom I had already begun to have a very strong relationship with the lions. And then it just has continued to unfold. And through it, I have again learnt that at the time, I usually have no idea of the profundity, the nuance of what is being shared, transmitted, offered. And that for me, it is to be present with respect. And well, that's it. And then from whatever else is after that, is an unfolding, an ever-unfolding experience. And I myself in many ways feel I have still yet to really take in even myself everything that's being offered through these experiences and to share them.
Amazing.
Crane Leaving speaking.
I need a boyfriend.
Well, we have Senor Sombrero Asakusa-san, or if you swing that way,
Antoinette is available too. Check them out on queen-living.com and enjoy 10% off with Radio 10 when you cart out.
Oh, okay.
Terms and conditions apply. Don't get too excited. These are just names of our collections. We don't work that way. If you'd like to interact with real humans, come down to our flagship store at 46 Kim Yam Road.
Just before we move on to your art, which I'm itching to do, you know, your that experience, that initial experience, and now your ability to still be able to tap it and channel it through years later, raises the question for me, I guess, is how important is it to have some form of initial mastery over your own awareness, your own ability to observe, your energy body, and then second to that, that enormous experience that you had was in the presence of a very stable, very grounded, seasoned shamanic practitioner. How important yeah. is that too?
I really, like anything, you know, it's we need mentors, we need elders, we need the companionship along the way of those whom can guide us, reassure us, assist us to navigate, hold space, and also share with us techniques, practices. It's like anything. You know, learning to play an instrument. We have our own kind of gift and our own everything that we bring in, but then, of course, we would naturally, we seek inspiration and guidance and even practices, of course. That's right. Or this practice, that scale, you know, and then practice that more and more. And then that in itself becomes a journey and a greater knowingness. And as I said, if that experience, you know, that occurred where in my early, I'm 54, so, okay, 2021, so I was 52. If that experience had come to me a decade or so earlier even, when I was already, because I have been, you might say, working, studying, practicing since 17, the age of 17, and imbibing and grounding myself in the different global shamanic traditions, including Tibetan Buddhism, you know, where there's a lot of awareness of to the benefit and necessity, because otherwise we can experience things that take us so far that without the support and grounding and mentorship.
And I think as well, you know, I mean, even by your own admission, even though you were able to observe what was going on and it simultaneously experience what was going on, it was big. And and I do think, you know, that there's been a lot of conditioning which brings about a reaction of fear to a lot of shamanic experiences in ritual or journey or plant medicine, for example, and which tends to then lock it down and not allow it its full expression. And so that's where the presence of a really good practitioner is so important, that because they don't hold that grid of fear. They don't they're able to move you really gently through that and keep a sense of safety in it all, right?
Exactly. And Valerie, you know, very early on, and I, you know, if it wasn't for her beautiful, calm presence, and I knew also I was trusting in both my own clarity that, as I said, the initial wave of absolute shock and fear and thinking, yes, oh my gosh, is this some kind of possession? You know, what is this? But then immediately I thought, Zenta, you know, become present to your senses, feel into it. And yes, then I knew I could trust that. And having Valerie beside me. And for a long time, you know, I kept going back and she kept saying, oh, you can do this. You don't need me. And I said, but Valerie, it is a beautiful gift for you to be seated beside me while I open to this. And I seek that. Yeah. And, you know, it's very important. And we are interdependent. That's what it is to be community. That's what it is. You know, this is a beautiful thing, and we need one another always, ever. And even the elders, they need one another. The elders need the elders.
Yeah, absolutely. And you experience that in your life, though, don't you? When you're on your spiritual path and you're seeking, and then the perfect teachers come in at the right time, you know, and it's, you couldn't orchestrate it yourself any better, could you? You just enabled, if you've got this authentic, seeking and authentic heart in wanting to understand the self and the world and spirit, you are totally enabled along the way, aren't you?
Yes, yes.
Okay, let's get to your art. So your art for me is sublime. I love it. And within it, there are elements of Africa. There's the Egyptian elements, obviously, and there's archetypal indigenous elements. It's simple, but at the same time, it's super powerful and it's very active. And it stirs something in the observer. And what I love about it is that it feels more like an invitation to engage rather than a message being pushed into my mind. And this is what I'd love to talk about with you. And I know you're deeply inspired by rock art all around the world, which you can see within your artwork. So could you tell us more about this, and how is rock art, and how are all these amazing inner personal experiences culminating in your work? That's a big question, I know.
Yeah, thank you. Look, rock art from a very young age always captured my attention, my imagination, a feeling in me of remembering, of just a relationship with it, a tenderness. And I've always considered rock art as if to be like the first imprint of our DNA as human beings on the planet, responding to, in communion with great mystery. And so for me, rock art carries the kind of original purity. It doesn't matter from which land, which continent, which culture. You look at rock art, it's like a distilled essence, an imprint of spirit that does, it invites, it opens, it stirs, and it is in itself a living, breathing consciousness. And yet it has been birthed and born through the human beings who have opened themselves and you know, put those fingers into the ochre and touched those rock walls and then created those exquisite images that are transmissions of information, of numinous, you know, states of being where there was communion. And it's like the bridge between the celestial and terrestrial world for me. And so without having intended to in any way, you know, replicate rock art, it's, I suppose, not surprising that somehow that sort of, there's an imprint of that in the work that has, you know, in the painting that has come through me. I originally started just painting on, you know, rocks and on shaman drums and on, you know, rawhide shields. And then one day in 2014, it was a prayer. I had the prayer of sitting with the grandmother, of, you know, the prayer to the grandmothers of wanting to become a grandmother in the wisdom way of the grandmothers of the world. And I thought, goodness, I wouldn't have the skill to paint that on a rock or even a drum. I somehow need more space. But I was not keen on the idea of taking up a whole canvas and painting in that way. But it wouldn't leave me. So it was like I felt I needed to express this prayer. So I thought, well, and I don't even want to paint with color. I just want to paint with white, and as if I'm painting on the earth or on a rawhide drum or a shield or a stone. So I thought, oh, well, I could sort of create like an ochre-like background, and why don't I just use white? What are the rules? This is the thing, you know, I love to share with people. You follow your own intuitive joy and don't feel, oh, if I paint, I have to do it a certain way, you know. just follow. This is what I call, again, the realm of the poetic within you. Find out. Offer yourself to it. See what happens. And it's the same as continuum as with all the rest. I bring myself forward. I offer myself to be present. And then I go through the very ordinary experience of wrestling, you might say, navigating, using my senses, stepping, putting myself aside, my own preferences, my ideas I might have of, oh, I'm going to do this. And then I might even try it. And I can see the painting, the imprint of spirit is just like, no, it might be lovely, darling, but actually get rid of it. So I have to go, oh, okay, and erase from the canvas. Listen, and with respect. Sometimes I even cry while I'm doing a painting because I get frustrated or I'm navigating. It's not easy. Yeah. And this is the thing too, we must remember these journeys and experiences that so deeply inform us, strengthen us, widen us, they also can be, you know, uncomfortable. There's while we navigate, while we learn, while we wrestle with the muse.
Could you tell us a little bit about the actual creative process for you? So, you know, where do the images come from? Do they come into dreaming? Do they just emerge slowly?
Yes.
Does it happen when you're actually in process? Do you meditate before you paint?
Yeah.
What do you do?
What do I do? Well, as I said, the first one, sitting with the grandmother, came literally as if it just spontaneously arose, this sense of a visual prayer. And from there, each of the paintings come in their own way, either a dream. I will experience a dream in the night, and there's something so powerful about it, it won't let up. In fact, actually, one of the paintings, Riding Skyhorse, is of a dream that I dreamed when I was, I think, 26, and it was such a powerful dream, and it has stayed with me my entire life. And there I was, all of a sudden, it just came through as if, okay, now you need to paint this to fulfill the dream, to actually offer more. So there you go. Talk about timelines and, you know, everything. You don't know how it's all going to weave itself together. And then in more recent years, yes, the channeling through Breath of Ptah. Some of the experiences I've had, like when I was taken into Hathor, the ancient Egyptian, you know, primal goddess, and Hatshepsut, the female pharaoh, and what was spoken and shared, that was a very much almost a directive. She needed to be painted, to be brought forth, because she wants to communicate a lot of that which was misunderstood at her time, even, and immediately after, when she was literally erased from Egyptian history and is only now really in more recent time being rediscovered as the extraordinary being that she was. And often I'll sit with it for a while. It's as though I circle around and it circles in me, but I won't let up. And then it's as if I sort of go, oh, okay.
Yeah, all right. I'll get to work.
Exactly. Some sense of a visual. There'll be some, again, imprint. But then when I bring myself to the canvas, it's like I have to wait. I have to listen. I feel it. I sense it. And I just have to start. I don't do drawings beforehand. It has to happen immediately, physically in front of the canvas with the brush dipped in the paint, and I find my way.
Beautiful. And I can see as well how your creative expression through producing these artworks is part of that process for you, is part of that integration of bringing it to earth, and almost literally, because your work looks like rock paintings. We're going to put links to your work with this podcast so people can actually see what we're talking about. So one last question, Zenta. So oracle decks are very popular these days for inspiration or guidance or divination, and there's lots of different varieties out there. As the creator of Lioness, Light Oracle deck. What are some ways that people can engage with this form of spiritual practice?
Yes. Well, the divination deck really has been created to offer another template, you might say, support for the journey of our sacred task as spirit embodied in matter. So it's about being able to incorporate the spectrum of ourself as both celestial and terrestrial, therefore the human experience. So other than cutting off or denying or shaming either the aspects of our suffering and our humanness, to be able to use the guide, the deck, as the form of reflection, of form of contemplation, and to assist us with the bridging work, the bridging of being spirit embodied in matter, guiding us back into the heart that is both the gossamer light of creation and the human heart that carries the personal intimate journey that we each carry. And so through the deck, which is soon to be published, which will be great joy for me to announce and share.
And a great, great gift to all of us as well. Yeah, fantastic.
Thank you. In the meantime, people can actually have personal sessions with me where I work with the Lioness Light Oracle deck. I have what might be called an artist-proof deck that I had made, which I'm also enjoying on Instagram. Once a week, I pull a card and offer it as a reflection and a sharing for everyone. So at the moment, yes, you can have a personal reading, offering whatever it is that you are bringing at this time, whether it's a particular issue that you would like to seek deeper clarity around, or whether you're moving into your journey of opening to spirit or just navigating different things in your life. For me, it's also about supporting everyone in the journey of our sovereignty in union within. So gathering, incorporating, balancing the sense of estrangement, separateness, division, polarity, you know, so really working at creating that integration, that greater cohesion within each of us, so that we can walk the goal of our life, you know, with a greater sense of inner sovereignty.
Beautiful. So all of the links to find Zenta will be in with the information with this podcast. So Zenta, just a gorgeous discussion. I could talk to you all day, basically. But
yes.
I know that you, in preparation for our chat today, you consulted the Lioness Light Oracle. So could you share with us what came through?
I'd love to. So the card that came, the oracle, is Snow Goose, a beautiful, gentle offering. And I'd love to just read, if you don't mind, some of her message. Begins with the seed essence. She flies silent across land, lake, and sea, navigating lines of invisibility, only to be sensed, felt. At night through day, her feathers soft white, her voice a call unchanged. She is your guiding star. And the voice of spirit, I come now to carry you across the seas, across the timeless landscapes that stretch out beneath you as together we fly. I carry you in the softness of my wings, so you may rest and be restored with new vision of your life's terrain. Take time now to enter the silence. Create space for gentle contemplation and sensing. If you listen well enough, you will hear the soft hush of the stars as they watch over you. Allow for the natural rhythms of the celestial universe to guide your way. Become present and connected to the inflow and outflow of your breath. You do not need to strain or force anything. Easefulness and trust are now your signatures. Give over without effort to your own unique way of sensing into the terrain you are moving through. Like geese and other migratory birds that carry within their body an inner navigational sensing of the invisible ley lines, you are assured you will find your way. So that's just an excerpt that I thought, what a beautiful message Snow Goose wanted to share.
How beautiful, and very synchronous with the themes we've discussed today.
Yes.
So good. Look, Zenta, thank you for sharing with us your personal wisdom, your perspectives on modern shamanism, your beautiful process and your art and the tools that are soon to be offered to the world, which I'm super excited about. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Danny. It was a great joy and great pleasure. Many blessings.
Blessings to you. Bye for now. Yeah.